Well, is it ever right to raise your voice to God? To speak to him loudly, maybe in frustration, in anger, maybe in despair. The psalmist says, I cry aloud to God. He then repeats it, aloud to God, and he will hear me. So come with me, please, to the reading which we had, Psalm 77. It's a psalm, it's a song, it's poetry. Poetry that expresses the deepest emotions of the soul. And as we read the psalm, we find the psalmist is plunged into despair because he can see no future. And for him, this is more than a worst-case scenario because he's doubting who God is. There's a sense when you read this psalm, the psalmist is saying, I thought I knew who God is. I don't know anymore. I thought he was the unchanging God, ever the same, the God of steadfast love and faithfulness. I don't know if that's true anymore. Maybe God has changed. Maybe God has abandoned us. So far, verse 7, he comes out with these questions. Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all time? See, it's the ultimate, isn't it? Forever ceased. For all time, has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he, in anger, shut up his compassion? What do you do when God seems to turn against you? When God appears to love you no longer? And you can say, well, don't tell me to trust in the Lord, because the thought of the Lord brings to me no comfort at all. Verse 3, when I remember God, when I start thinking about him, I moan. The thought of God brings me no comfort at all. And don't start saying to me all things work together for good, because I don't know if I still believe that, says the psalmist. Verse 4, I'm so troubled that I cannot speak. And maybe as you come here this morning, or if you join us on live stream, maybe that's exactly where you are. You're a believer, but you feel that God has abandoned you. So let's look at Psalm 77 together. What's the setting? Because that brings the context, doesn't it? The setting is a lot of these psalms in this 70s and beginning of the 80s, it's the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 BC by the Babylonians, where in judgment upon a rebellious people, every institution that God had set up came crashing down. So the holy city, Jerusalem, was destroyed. The temple, God's house, was burned down. The king was sent into exile. The priests were either exiled or executed. And the prophets, well, there's a lone voice, Jeremiah, but where is the word of the Lord? And the people, the sheep of his pasture, what's happened to them? Well, they've either gone into exile or they've been slaughtered. But here's the rub. This is what's really troubling him. He's saying, look, if all this judgment has come upon us because of our stubbornness and rebellion, if God has cut us off in his anger, well, says the psalmist, it seems to be there's no way back. Because if there's no temple and no altar and no priests, there can be no sacrifice for sins. How can we make atonement for our sins? How can we put things right? Because, well, there's no path, is there, to forgiveness and peace and reconciliation. With the destruction of Jerusalem, with the destruction of all the institutions that God has set up, there seems to be no way back to God. So maybe God has finished with his people forever. Verse 8, has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all time? So that's the setting for his words. Maybe now you begin to see the anguish of the psalmist. Maybe now you begin to see why the thought of God brings him no comfort at all, because God has cast them off. It's God who's against them. And there's no way back to God. Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? So let's look at this psalm. We'll look at it under three headings, three points. And point number one, raising your voice to God. telling him what you really think. What you really think of him. Verse 1, I cry aloud to God. In case you've misunderstood what he said, aloud to God. And he will hear me. But then look at verse 4. I'm so troubled that I cannot speak. So in one breath he's saying, I cry aloud to God. And the next breath he's saying, I cannot speak. Which is it? Well, it's both. He's saying, I can't speak, and yet I will speak. I'm so troubled that I have no words, but I'm going to force myself to find words. Those thoughts are just going round and round and round inside of me. But I'm going to put those thoughts into words, and I'm going to speak those words to God. And if God has stopped listening, then I will raise my voice. I'll force him to listen to me. I cry aloud to God, and he will hear me. I'll force him to listen to what I have to say. So maybe God has changed, but I want him to hear what I have to say. So brothers and sisters, thoughts going round and round and round, put those thoughts into words and talk them to God. And if you feel that God is not listening, then raise your voice. Shout if you have to. So he does hear you. Maybe you think, are we allowed to do that? Well, who do you tell your heart to? You tell your heart to the one you trust. Well, the Lord may have spurned his people, but the psalmist is still trusting him. He hasn't appointed an alternative God. He hasn't said, well, if that's what God is like, I'm done with him. He's going to the only God there is. He's still trusting him. He's still running to him. He's determined to be heard. I cry aloud to God, and he will hear me. So, brothers and sisters, when trouble comes, and maybe the thought of God doesn't comfort you at all because it seems to you that this trouble has been brought into your life by God, it's not unbelief to wonder if God has changed. It's not shallow faith to challenge him. We don't want superficial remedies, do we? You know, if you watch Postman Pat, there's the Reverend Timms. And the Reverend Timms says things like, oh, trust the Lord, Pat. And it can be very glib, can't it? I don't mean Postman Pat can be very glib, but what people say can be very glib. So it's just superficial. You have to trust the Lord. Well, we do, but what does that look like? What does that mean? It means sometimes getting our voices to God, getting our souls to God, refusing to be silenced, taking it to him. See what the psalmist is doing, verse 2? He goes looking for God. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. I'm not going to curl up and die. I'm going to go looking for him. And I'm not going to settle for anything less. Okay? And now the psalmist, he shares his experience. He wants us to feel what he feels. So let's listen to what he says, because you may find, as you hear what he has to say, you hear echoes of your own experience. So he's told us in verse 2, in the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. But then he goes on, in the night my hand is stretched out without wearying, my soul refuses to be comforted. In the night my hand is stretched out. What do we do with our hands? Well, we work, we build, we plant, we cook. You might use your hands to fight. But sometimes we're so battered and so despondent, the only thing you can do with your hands is stretch them out and plead. When you see a toddler in distress, sometimes all the toddler can do is just put its hands out like that until the toddler's picked up. That's the sense of it. I'm so battered and bruised, I can't do anything. All I can do is just stretch out my hands. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. Because often it's the night time, isn't it, when we can't sleep. It's the darkest hour. Verse 2, my soul refuses to be comforted. Do you know that? When we can't be comforted, what do? We distract ourselves. Maybe that's what you've been doing. So you stay up late till you fall asleep. Or scrolling, or music, or sport, or shopping, or films, or takeaways, or something. And they're all just distractions. They're all trying to fill the void, fill the space. What was this psalmist? I can't distract myself. Nothing works. My soul refuses to be comforted. When I remember God, verse 3, I moan. When I meditate, my spirit faints. The thought of God just makes things worse. Because what if God has abandoned us? What if God is never coming back? Verse 4, you hold my eyelids open. I'm so troubled that I cannot speak. He's saying, Lord, you keep me awake at night because I just have these troubling thoughts and I just can't sleep. You keep me awake. You keep me awake. And I'm struck dumb in the day. I'm so troubled that I cannot speak. It's a nightmare, isn't it? A woman on a silver wedding anniversary, true story, opened the present that her husband left behind before he went to work. A special gift for their special day. When she opened the present, she burst into tears. Why? Well, it was a nice gift. It was a pretty necklace. Now, she didn't know that her husband was saving the big present for their anniversary meal. But in that moment, when she opened that little present, she wondered, does he still love me? Is this present, is that what 25 years means to him? And in that moment, the thought of her husband of 25 years brought her no comfort at all, because the thought came into her mind that maybe he's changed. Maybe he doesn't love me anymore. And it felt crushing. See where the psalmist is coming from. I love the Lord, but has the Lord divorced his people? I love the Lord, but has the Lord stopped loving me? And it's unbearable. It's interesting the names he uses for God. As you know, the Lord's name in the Old Testament is Yahweh. In our translations, it's in capital letters, L-O-R-D, Lord. It's God's intimate name. It's the name that God uses with his people, the God who loves his people unbreakably. But he doesn't use that name in this psalm. He uses, says, he calls him God, Elohim. He calls him Adonai, Lord. But he doesn't call him the God who's invincibly committed to his people, because he's not sure whether God is invincibly committed to his people. Maybe Yahweh has changed. Okay, verse 5. We're going through the darkness, but maybe a touch of optimism. I consider the days of old, the years long ago. We know that, don't we? Touch of optimism in dark places. What do? We try and cheer ourselves up. We try and find a better vibe. And maybe for him, the better vibe is the good old days. The good old days of David and Solomon, the glory years. And yes, the songs that went with that. I consider the days of old, the years long ago. I said, let me remember my song in the night. When the night time is the worst time, so let me sing a song. Let me meditate in my heart. Let me have something to cheer me up. Do you know that feeling? Bit of mood music. Bit of nostalgia. Happier days. Cheer yourself up. But it's another distraction, isn't it? And the darkness returns. Verse 6, then my spirit made diligent search. I've been searching, searching, searching for answers. And I can't make sense of any of it. Verse 7, will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? Are you this morning where the psalmist is? Maybe something has happened to you. Maybe something is happening to you at the moment. And what's happened to you has shaken your view of the Lord. You thought you knew the Lord. But the Lord you thought you knew and trusted, after this has happened, you're thinking, I don't know if I know him. Maybe I was wrong about him. Maybe he's not the God that I thought that he was. Because how can this have happened and come from the hand of the God who says he loves me? Maybe it's loved ones who are causing you heartache, real heartache, heartbreaking. Maybe you're in a situation and you just cannot see any way forward. As you look into the future, it's just darkness. Maybe you've been going through suffering. And, you know, it's like waiting for a bus, isn't it? You think, well, you know, by now the bus should have come by now. And then you think, well, the bus is never coming. And when we suffer, there are times when we think, well, it should be over by now. My suffering should have come to an end. And it hasn't come to an end. And it seems to be going on and on and on. And we think, is this going to be forever? Maybe there are situations over which you have no control, but that situation has left you devastated. Maybe it's something that happened to you in your childhood. And you think, well, if God loved me, how could he allow that to have happened to me when I was a child? Maybe it's a situation of your own making. And that's adding to things. You may think, well, yeah, I deserve to be spurned by the Lord. But whatever it is, it's unbearable. But what does the psalmist do? Does he curl up in a ball? I cry aloud to God, aloud to God. It's quite forceful, isn't it? You know, if I was a teacher and some kid raised his voice to me, I said, don't you raise your voice to me. But he's raising his voice to God. And you will hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. So what should you do? Well, as we start to unravel this, force yourself to talk to God. Force yourself. Take yourself in hand. Force yourself to talk to God, and therefore force him to listen to you. Point number two. Point number two is a look back. So our psalmist is in distress, he's in despair, verses 7 to 9. So how does he deal with this? How does he deal with this sense that God may have changed? That maybe God doesn't love us anymore? What does he do? He looks back. Look at verse 10. Then I said, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. So here's this, his hands coming in again. He's already spoken about his hands. All he can do with his hands is stretch them out to the Lord. He feels helpless. He's the toddler with his arms upraised. But the right hand of the Lord, if my hand is helpless, his hand is certainly not helpless. So I'm going to look back at what God has done in former days, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. And then he spells it out in more detail. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your wonders of old. So he's looking back. I will ponder all your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. Now again, it's interesting, isn't it? Verse 5, he considers the days of old, but it's like a nostalgic look back. It's all about vibes and atmosphere. But he's not looking back to vibes and atmosphere. He's looking back to deeds. Because atmospheres just disappear, don't they? But when you've got something concrete, facts, deeds. So concrete things that God has done. Verse 12, I will meditate on your mighty deeds. So what if the future looks dark? When I look back, the past is bright. Dark in front of me, bright behind me. Maybe the brightness of the past will illuminate the darkness of the future. You ever thought like that? The future looks dark. So what are we to do? We're to look at what God has done and let that throw light on the dark, uncertain future. So now looking at these verses 11 and 12, he's saying, I'm going to remember, I'm going to ponder, I'm going to meditate on your mighty deeds. So I'm not going to fill my mind with fears for the future. I'm going to fill my mind on the concrete deeds that God did in the past. And that light from the past will cast a light into the dark future. A light in a dark place. So what deed stands out amongst all God's wonderful deeds? Well, it's the great salvation event, isn't it? It's the Exodus. When the Lord came to the rescue, when the Lord redeemed his people. Wonders of old, as he calls it, mighty deeds. Look at verse 13. Your way, O God, is holy. What God is great like our God? You are the God who works wonders. You have made known your might among the peoples. You with your arm, there it is again, the arm, redeemed your people, the children of Jacob and Joseph. The day when God rolled up his sleeves, that's the sense of it, isn't it? With your arm, you rolled up his sleeves and he came to the rescue with your right, with your arm. You with your arm redeemed your people. God's mighty arm, mighty to save. And so we move on to verses 16 to 20. And what's verses 16 to 20 describing? It's describing the crossing of the Red Sea. It's putting it beautifully, because it's poetry. And you can read the prose account, the details in Exodus 14. But the crossing of the Red Sea, wasn't that a desperate moment when everything seemed to be lost? What was God doing, leading his people out of Egypt and into a trap, into the mother of all calamities? You think about it. Here's this nation, they've just come out of Egypt. They're a flock of sheep, so they can't defend themselves. And in that flock of sheep, there are lots of lambs. They're coming out with all their children, and they're helpless, and they're defenseless, and they've come up to the Red Sea. So they can't go forward because the Red Sea is there. So as they turn round, what do they see? They see the mighty Egyptian army charging towards them. They're caught between the Red Sea and the Egyptians. But they're children. They're a flock of sheep. What can they do? There's no way out. They're just sheep for the slaughter. Has God redeemed his people out of Egypt only then to lead them into disaster? Is it out of the frying pan, into the fire? And you get the sense of it when you hear what they have to say. Okay, this is them at the Red Sea. They said to Moses, is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. You've simply brought us out. You've led us into a trap. We're going to be slaughtered. It would have been better if we'd just been left us alone. And you can hear echoes, can't you, in verses 7 to 9. But of course, things are not what they seem. When the crisis is upon them, upon this flock of sheep, where is the shepherd? Well, the shepherd is where he's always been, with his people. Verse 16, when the waters saw you, O God, when the waters saw you, these are the waters of the Red Sea, they were afraid. Indeed, the deep trembled. It's great, isn't it? The Red Sea took one look at God and ran away. That's the sense of it. And left a path through the sea The Red Sea parted, and the people were able to cross the sea on dry land. Now, they've been led to this point by the pillar of cloud. That was the symbol of God's presence with them. And the pillar of cloud had been in front of them, but then the pillar of cloud moves round to behind them. And again, Exodus 14, we read this. Then the angel of God, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. So there they are. There's the Red Sea. There's the Egyptian army charging towards them. The Lord has led them to this point because he's the cloud leading the way. And then the pillar of cloud moves round his people and stands between, the pillar of cloud comes between the people, the sheep, and the advancing Egyptians. See what's going on? He's the shepherd. And so what does the shepherd do? He stands between his people and the danger. Standing between his people and the Egyptians. And so as his people cross the Red Sea in safety, because there's a path, the Red Sea has run away from God, and there's a path of dry land through the Red Sea, the pursuing Egyptians, what do? They run into the Lord. They run into this great cloud. And says the psalmist, that great cloud becomes a storm cloud. And there's thunder and lightning and whirlwind. Verse 17, the clouds poured out water, the skies gave forth thunder, your arrows, that's your lightning, flashed on every side, the crash of your thunder was in the whirlwind, your lightnings lighted up the world, the earth trembled and shook. Hey, graphic, isn't it? You know, Egypt is the superpower. Think of superpowers today. Probably only one, isn't there? The United States. Here's all the might of the United States, think of it like that, or Egypt. This is the superpower, charging with their chariots, their tanks, they're coming, and there's a flock of sheep. What can the sheep do? But they run straight into the Lord. Because the Lord wasn't against his people. He wasn't leading them into disaster. He's for his people. Because he's the good shepherd. The good shepherd loves his sheep. And the good shepherd, he overthrew the Egyptians. And when all seemed to be lost, and that moment they're panicking, they're saying to Moses, should have left us in Egypt, at least we'd be alive. When all seemed to be lost, all was won. And God led his people to safety. Verse 19, your way was through the sea, your path through the great waters, yet your footprints were unseen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. It was a crisis. It was a crisis, as it were, into which God had led them. But he led them into the crisis only then to lead them safely out the other side. The path that he took them was through great waters. So it's not denying that it was a mighty obstacle. Great waters, it seemed very threatening. It seemed like it would make an end of them. But actually they went through the great waters, into trouble and safely out the other side. So do you see what the psalmist is saying? Is the future dark? Well, let's let light from the past shine into that future. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember the wonders of old. And if the Lord came to the rescue then why not now? If he led them safely through that crisis, why not the shepherd leading us through this crisis? If the shepherd left them safely then why not now? And there's a key word in all of this. It's in verse 19. Your way was through the sea, your path through the great waters, yet your footprints were unseen. That's the key to it, unseen. So God was there, but they couldn't see him leading the way. You couldn't see him. Your footprints were unseen. Now, he was leading them, and he says he was leading them by the hand of Moses and Aaron. So then he was unseen. What is the psalmist? He's unseen now, isn't he? What? Where is he? But as he was unseen then, but was with them, maybe, yeah, he's unseen now, but maybe he's with us now. Maybe, verse 7, he hasn't spurned us forever. Although I can't see it, you couldn't see it then. Maybe, verse 8, he still does, he still loves us. Maybe, verse 9, he's still the God of grace. So, brothers and sisters, there are times when we won't see the shepherd. You want me to say, ah, yes, it was the Lord. There are no happy providences, no special verses, no comforting words of a friend. We may not see the shepherd. His footprints are unseen. But it doesn't mean he's abandoned us. Doesn't mean he ceased to lead us. Doesn't mean he ceased to love us. He's still the good shepherd. And if he lost one sheep, he would lose his good name. And he's never going to do that. And then the psalm just ends. It's all a bit abrupt, isn't it? Why does it end like that? Why just stop like that? Because then says God, come on, do the arithmetic. Do the arithmetic. Think it through. Here's something for you to take away, put in your pocket, get out, look at it, think about it. So point number 3. Point number 3. In my present situation then, brothers and sisters, what should I do? Maybe your experience is exactly the experience of the psalmist. What should I do? Well, these are suggestions. They're quick fire. They're incomplete. But go away and think about it. Number 1, think. Think. He says, I will remember the deeds of the Lord. So he remembers the Exodus. When the Lord led his people into a crisis. Can you make sense of that? Only then to lead them safely out of that crisis to the other side. He led them to the place of great waters, you might say of deep waters. But the waters didn't overwhelm them. The waters parted. Maybe that's what the Lord is doing. He's led you into something, and you think this is it. He's changed. He doesn't love me anymore. But he leads us through and out safely the other side. And yet the waters are deep, and they feel threatening. And then they couldn't see the shepherd, could they? But though they couldn't see him, he never took his eyes off them. He wasn't visible, but he never left their side. And you know the words of our shepherd. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. The Lord is not a hired hand. When the trouble comes, he doesn't do a runner. He's invincibly committed to his sheep. He's laid down his life for them. My sheep hear my voice, he says, and I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life, and they will never perish. And no one will snatch them out of my hand. So we may not be able to see him, but we are never out of his sight. And if he's led you into this crisis, he'll lead you safely out of it. And yes, you'll see deep waters, but they won't drown you. He'll lead you safely through this crisis to the other side. And maybe, yes, the valley, the path that you're taking is very deep and very dark. And it seems to be going on and on and on. And because it's so dark, that's why you can't see him. But he's no less with you. He'll guide you safely through to the farther side. For God's people, there's always a farther side. So think. And number two, talk. That's what he does, isn't it? So don't curl up and die. Don't go quiet. Don't let the thoughts just go round and round and round inside you. Force yourself to talk to the Lord. You've got all these things that are in you, in your heart. Well, what are you going to do with them? Well, tell him all your heart. Pray yourself empty. Everything that's inside you, tell him till you've got nothing left to say. You've told him the lot. And if you think he's not listening to you, well, find a place where you're not going to be interrupted, and don't be afraid to speak to him out loud. That's what the psalmist says, I cry aloud to God. Now, we know that God can hear the prayers that are in our hearts. We understand that, don't we? But by telling him, it's a wonderful expression of trust. And all that pent-up emotion and feeling, give expression to it. Tell him what you really think. Maybe you've never done that. Maybe always something comes in and says, oh yes, but if you're a Christian, if you've got real faith, you shouldn't be talking like that. No. Tell him. I cry aloud to God, and he will hear me. Third thing, ask. The psalmist isn't afraid to put God on the spot. So we might say, oh, is Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever? And the answer might come back, really? Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? These are real questions, aren't they? Are his promises at an end for all time? Has God forgotten? Have you forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? Listening to the words of a man, and he lost his daughter. He said he didn't have big enough words to express his grief until he came to verses 7 to 9. And all that grief of losing his daughter, he could say to God, in the words of Psalm 77, have you spurned me? Has your love ceased? Under the circumstances, those are legitimate questions, aren't they? And they don't spring from unbelief. They're real questions. And God is very tender. There are things which if you say to other people, it may not be safe for them to hear. But it's always safe to say those things to God. He's very tender. Number four, the cross. So where does the psalmist look back to? He looks back to that great salvation event in the Old Testament, the Exodus. So where do we look back to? We want light from the past to cast into the present and into the future. So what's our great salvation event? Well, it's the ultimate salvation event, isn't it? It's the ultimate Exodus, the great redemption. Verse 12, I will ponder all your work and meditate on your mighty deeds. We go to the cross, and what do we see there? At the cross, verse 7, Jesus was spurned. At the cross, verse 8, to all appearances, his steadfast love towards the only faithful Israelite, Jesus, to all appearances, that steadfast love had ceased. At verse 9, at the cross, in his anger, towards his son, he shut up his compassion. And a real man on the cross cried, forsaken! Why have you forsaken me? Because God did not spare his own son. And if we were at the cross at the time, we wondered, does God know what he's doing? Here's the King of the Jews. Here's Messiah. Here's the Savior of the world. And he's nailed to a cross. And the wicked are like dogs scenting blood and they're baying around him. Does God know what he's doing? Everything at the cross seems to be a denial of who God is, the God that we know. But now, of course, we see. Because he hangs there for his people. He hangs there for me. And as I see the fact that he's there, bearing my sin, suffering, bleeding, dying for me, that he's forsaken, that I might never, ever be forsaken, my mind starts to be filled with other questions. When I think of how at Calvary he bore sin's penalty instead of me, amazed, I wonder why he, the sinless one, should die for one so vile as I, my Saviour, he. I will remember the deeds of the Lord. I will remember your wonders of old. You are the God who works wonders. You've made known your might among your peoples. With your arm you redeemed your people. Oh, the redemption that took place at the cross. Brothers and sisters, God has saved me from the ultimate calamity. Therefore, he will save me from every lesser calamity. And that pledge he has written in the blood of his Son. And it's unthinkable that he should desert me now. And the final thing to say, number five, is simply obey. Now, Psalm 77 is a psalm of Asaph. Asaph, if you look elsewhere, he's a Levite. He's from the tribe of Levi. Moses and Aaron, verse 20, are Levites. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. Levites, what's the point? Well, who is supposed to lead the people of God? The king. Which tribe is he from? He's from the tribe of Judah. So it's the Judahites who are supposed to be the leaders of God's people. But the king's gone into exile. Yes, but at the Exodus, God led his flock by the hand of the Levites. He didn't lead his flock by the hands of those from Judah. He led his people by the hand of the Levites. So what's it saying? Asaph, you're a Levite. The king has gone. The king's gone into exile. The people seem to be rudderless, leaderless. But don't despair, Asaph, over the leadership of the flock. Because in the great salvation event, he led the flock by the Levites. So whatever God is doing, you, Asaph, a Levite, be true to your calling. And you teach and pastor the flock. Do what God has given you to do. And therefore, brothers and sisters, whatever God is doing, and the danger is, you see, when we're in distress, in despair, we put everything on hold. Until I get past this. And it's saying, no, 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 no. Whatever God is doing and you can't make sense of it, you still have your calling to do today what God has given to you to do. And not to wait to do it when all this has passed, but to do today what God has given you to do. It's an old chorus, isn't it? Trust and obey. For there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Let's pray.